Airports are given a new tool to help relieve congested schedules. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest today is Greg Principato, who is the president of Airports Council International North America. We're here to talk a little bit about a court decision which has allowed airports to charge differing landing fees based on time of day, which will allow a tool to spread out the madness we all encounter when we want to fly someplace and find the entire world herded through a TSA line. Greg, thanks for taking some time out to talk to us about this court decision and its impact. Tell us a little bit about Airports Council International North America.
Well, Paul, thank you for having me. Airports Council International North America is the association that represents commercial service airports in the U.S. and in Canada. We have about 180 members. Our members are the entities that own the airports. They own about 400 airports. Many of them, by the way, are GA airports. Obviously, you have a number of places like New York, Las Vegas, Minneapolis, Tampa, where the owner of the commercial service airport also owns a number of GA airports. So we do have a mixture in our membership. We're also part of a worldwide federation of airport organizations that is the official and accredited voice of airports at the International Civil Aviation Organization and other international bodies.
I think a lot of times people who fly commercial airlines think of airports as, you know, kind of an inert intermediary in the process. They don't realize that airports have concerns, and some of them are big concerns.
Well, they are. I like to say that 30 years ago when the airlines were deregulated, the idea was that the airline was the service provider and the airports were just a facility. I think that's flipped. The airlines, by in a way, commoditizing their experience, it's hard to tell the difference between an old legacy carrier and a low-cost carrier like an AirTran or something. You get the same peanuts and, the same amenities or lack thereof. The airports have stepped into the breach and offer a range of services. It used to be that if you were late or if your plane was canceled, the airline would see to it that you got fed or that you had a place to stay. Now, increasingly, the airport steps into that. The airport is the face of the community to the air transportation system. The airport is the entity that really is out there working to increase competitive air service and choice. Those extra links to the air transportation network. So yeah, the airport is much more than the facility that some people once thought it was and probably once was. The most interesting recent example I like to give people is that during the volcanic ash disruption earlier this year, when so many people were stranded on airports on both sides of the Atlantic, the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey brought in actual portable shower units so the passengers who were stuck there for days on end could get cleaned up. The airport in Amsterdam got deodorant and clean underwear for people and distributed that. So airports play a major role that I think you're right is not often well enough understood.
Well, the airlines won't give you a free pillow anymore. I guess clean underwear is out of the question.
I think so.
All right, let's talk about congestion pricing and what it means. I mean, I think from the passenger side of things, we all understand how it impacts our experience when airports are very crowded. From an operational and monetary standpoint, what is this doing to airports and airport budgets when an airline, or a group of airlines will schedule 28 flights in 15 slots at 7 in the morning?
Well, I'll give you a better example than that. I was testifying in Congress a year and a half or so ago, and Congressman Costello asked my friend Jim May, how he could explain an airline scheduling 56 flights in a 15-minute period out of a hub airport. And Jim, to his credit, really said, I can't explain it. It's not explainable. No amount of now gen or next gen or any kind of air traffic control improvement's going to clean that up until we can invent passenger planes that just take off vertically and can get out that way. But this really gives airports a tool in the toolbox in order to give airlines an incentive to spread their schedules out, not to overschedule. You know, it used to be that there was no penalty or consequence that airlines scheduled 56 flights to leave at 8 in the morning. The explanation always was that's when passengers want to leave. But the reality was you'd buy an 8 o'clock ticket and you only had a fraction of a chance that you were going to get out of there within 15 minutes of 8 o'clock. And so, you know, I think when you give airports these kind of tools in the toolbox and you combine that with some of the new DOT rules concerning passenger rights and so forth and concerning, airlines having to accurately disclose their on-time performance and giving consumers those tools in their toolbox, that'll help mitigate some of the problems that we've seen with the previous system, where there really was no consequence for that kind of overscheduling.
Why do you think this was fought so vigorously? Because in every other facet of our lives, we're used to supply and demand. I mean, we know that when there's a freeze in California, some vegetables are going to cost more and we're going to have to pay more to get good seats at a concert. Why do the airlines, knowing that they can't get the planes out at the times advertised, fight this when the fees will get passed along to tickets and will give everybody the same relative advantage or disadvantage?
Well, I think, it's interesting. I think you make a couple of interesting points. The first is that if you read the opinion, the judge who wrote the opinion, Judge Ginsburg, I believe, pointed out that that congestion pricing, or whatever you want to call it, is a tool that airlines are well familiar with. If you want to leave at 6 in the morning, you pay a different price than if you want to leave at noon. So if you want to stay over Saturday night, you pay a different price than if you don't want to do that. So, the airlines are well familiar with the supply and demand and, the peak pricing, kind of approach. I think there's a certain amount of, I don't know if it's theology or what it is, but when it comes to anything that is seen by the airlines as undercutting their control of the schedule, I think they get very concerned. Even in a situation like this that I personally think will benefit the airlines in the long term, it's not the kind of thing where airports can just go and say, okay, well, we've got a crowded airport, so we're just going to charge everybody a whole lot more. The overall cost that that airports charge the airlines through the course of a day to use the facility by federal rule and law has not changed, still has to have something to do with and be related to the cost of the airfield, the cost of the operation. The airport can't just say, we're just going to double what we charge and just, bank the money. Doesn't go to executive bonuses, that's for sure. so it really is more of a tool to try to provide incentives to help the airport manage the flow of traffic at its facility.
How big will these fees have to be, Greg, to make a difference? I don't really have a good grasp on the economics of an individual airline flight or what would be big enough to incentivize an airline to spread the schedule around.
Well, I don't know really the answer to that question. It's kind of funny, for as hard as the airlines fought this, there are not a lot of airports who are even considering doing this right at the moment. I mean, it's something I think that airports, now that it's been clarified that they have in their toolbox, will look at. I know that there were a couple of airports before this went to court who told me that they were beginning to look at it. I don't really have a good answer to as to how high the fees will have to be to change behavior. One thing that's interesting about this rule is that the airports will have the flexibility to include the improvements at secondary airports in their system and the rate base of the major airport. So, for example, they could charge, they can put a charge in the rate base at the major airport and use those proceeds to help improve a secondary airport, which maybe GA traffic or some others might use and help reduce the congestion at the major airport. So there's some other interesting facets to this. You can also look at including in your rate base, the cost of projects that are underway and not yet completed. So I think, you know, people are still looking at what the decision says and what the rule says and how it might apply to their particular circumstance. And, you know, at that point, I think you'll see some airports do some things, but it's, you know, again, there's nothing in any of this that allows the airport to just say, I want to collect double from landing fees. I'm going to just double everything. Can't do that. You know, there has to be some basis in the overall cost of the facility and so forth for what you do. You know, I think in the end of the day, it just gives the airport and the community another tool to manage the flow of traffic and congestion at their facility.
Greg, we need to take a break, but I want to talk in a moment when we come back about how financially significant this will be for airports. My guest is Greg Principato, who is the president of Airports Council International North America. Back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wass GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Greg Principato of Airports Council International North America. We're talking about the ability airports have now under a recent court decision to charge landing fees that differ based on time of day in order to spread out congestion. Do you envision this becoming in any way a significant source of revenue for airports? I mean, airports get pinched all the way around. One of the few places that are regulated still in this whole process is the cap on the fee that airports can charge per passenger to improve their facilities. Will this be a little relief there or not significant?
Not at all, no. The airport can you know, can't just go out and say we're going to collect double on landing fees. What we collected before. It's not going to be a source of revenue at all. It really is a way of just sort of managing the flow and timing of the traffic. And so it's, you know, there's no extra financial support there. I mean, obviously airports being able to put the to put some of the cost of a project underway in their rate base will help in terms of managing the financing of a project, but, you know, today you have to wait till the project's done and being used to include it in there. And so at the end of the day, you know, in the long term, the net effect is about the same. In fact, it might even be cheaper for the airlines to do it that way because the cost of capital, you know, might be cheaper today than it is tomorrow. So it's in no way any kind of mitigation for not having the increase in the passenger facility charge, that you mentioned. We estimate that if the $4.50 passenger facility charge cap had been indexed to inflation when it was enacted, it would be $8.13 right now, and it's still $4.50. So it's worth not much more than half of what it was worth 10 years ago. The House of Representatives passed a bill that would increase the cap to $7, still well below the adjusted rate. The Senate has made a counteroffer of a smaller increase, and we're obviously fighting for the full amount. And again, I think this is something, you know, these projects are almost all approved by the airlines. The airlines have to be consulted on everyone. They approve of just about everyone. And if they weren't financed by the passenger facility charge. It would go into the rate base. And I don't know how many conversations I've personally been in or been told about between airport folks and airline folks about projects at particular airports that are financed with PFCs, and the airline is just very grateful that it's financed that way and not in their rate base. And so when it comes to the projects they know, you know, that they know about at the airports they serve, they're fine. But again, you know, there's a theology, I guess, that leads them to oppose the concept of a passenger facility charge. I don't really understand the approach.
Well, you know, I mean, Greg, you know, from an airline point of view, obviously any kind of a la carte fee of almost $3 would make or break their business. I mean, it's kind of hypocrisy, you know, the hypocrisy that I see there is kind of really funny because, you know, Delta, for example, will charge a family of four, which each takes two check bags, another $200 on a round trip, and then make a big deal out of rebating it out if you use their Affinity credit card. And yet they won't go another $3 on the facilities charge. It just seems kind of funny.
Well, it does. You know, we calculated that a family of four each taking two bags on a round trip, you know, it's $120 a person. That's $480 plus the peak travel fee of $30 a day that, you know, on each day of the summer except for July 4th that some of the airlines are charging. If you add it all together, it could be over $700 in fees. And to say that an airport shouldn't be allowed to add $2.50 to the fee it charges, and again, the passenger facility charge, every single penny is tied to projects. None of it goes into executive bonuses. None of it goes into anybody's pocket. None of it goes to pay a bureaucrat in any state capital or the national capital or anywhere else. It all goes to projects. It's a very efficient way to finance infrastructure. And I can't think of a single transportation financing mechanism in any mode in this country that's more efficient than the passenger facility charge.
Well, Greg, quickly before we close here, are you enjoying being a blogger?
I am. I am enjoying being a blogger. When it was first suggested to me a couple of years ago, I think the people here were afraid I wouldn't keep up with it. But I find myself when I'm traveling, all I have is my BlackBerry, and I got a little bit of time. I'll tap something out on that. I write probably about 2/3 of them, the blogs on the BlackBerry, and I have strong but sore thumbs at the moment. but it's fun. You know, the last one I wrote was partly about this court case, but also about some airport directors and staff that I visited out in Southern Virginia. And then part of it was just sort of my remembrances of Bob Shepard, who was the longtime PA announcer at Yankee Stadium. And I grew up there and went to a lot of Yankee games and Giant football games and heard his voice utter the names of, you know, Mantle and Maris and Ford and Barra and Tittle and Lawrence Taylor. And in addition to the visiting players that I heard him utter their names as well. And so, you know, it's fun to be able to use something like the blog to, you know, throw some thoughts about that down too. So I've had a great time with it.
Well, we appreciate the unique insight it provides. And I wish that more folks in positions like yours would share their perspectives because it's a little more personal than comes through your admittedly excellent PR department.
Yeah, our PR department does a great job. They don't edit the blog, though, so they actually let me post what I write. And probably, I don't know how many I've written over 2 years, but it'll probably only be two or three times when I've really asked one of them to take a look at it and make sure it was okay before I put it out there. Usually I just say, here it is, and you know, Tom probably has to clean up some of my poor grammar, but otherwise it goes on there the way it's written and unfiltered.
Well, I want to wish you on behalf of, well, I know many of our listeners, success in anything that spreads out this mass of people trying to get through the TSA line all at one time. And I know
we're trying to do that. By the way, speaking of TSA, you asked before about the baggage fees and all that. Mm-hmm. It's been shown that because of the baggage fees, people are bringing more bags on the plane, and that backs up the TSA line further. Just a thought.
Right. Well, Greg, again, thanks for taking some time out. I know it's a busy time for you, and we look forward to staying in touch.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Greg Principato is the president of Airports Council International North America. You can find out more about the organization and follow current topics at www.aci-na.org. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.